of you for breakout sessions for a two-hour period. I'll let you see how it's flowing. I'm going to turn the microphone over to our co-chairs for this session, Mr. Cake and Mr. Holmes, and let them run the discussion. And we'll just see how the queue goes and how much you want to desperately break out into your subgroups or continue this discussion. I'm going to look to Reed. He's going to turn down the system for a moment. Just we're done? Okay, so we're good, and we can just flow right into the session with Fadi. Fadi, welcome. Okay. We'll wait for Reed's hand to go up. This usually takes about 3 minutes, so the fact that it was already done was... It was too good to be true, correct. A quick... okay. Never mind, I won't start. Gentlemen?
Thank you. It gives me great pleasure. Welcome, Fadi. We don't have a... I know we don't have an organized set of questions or agenda for this session. It's going to be fairly free-form. So do you have anything you'd like to say to start us off? Or?
Happy New Year.
Fadi, excuse me. I wonder if we might maybe ask you to exchange places with Marcus so more people could see you.
Thanks.
And while I'm at it, I'll be moving a few more people.
Okay. If Marilyn has finished rearranging us to her satisfaction, so I'd like to ask if anyone who would like to start us off. Has anyone got a starting point for discussion or a first question? Yep, Ron.
Fadi, may as well warm you up with a softball. Ron Andruff, business constituency. You had a pretty heavy travel schedule last year, as we saw on the video. More meetings than days in the calendar, almost. So we've got a big year ahead of us. We've got a lot of things on the agenda, accountability and so forth. Net Mundial has been a big project for you. Where do you see your time being spent now in terms of percentages going forward? And what do you see the big three things are that we need to deal with in the coming 12 months? Thank you.
And thank you, Ron. If it's any indication, my wife Sue and I are looking to rent a place in D.C., so if that gives you an indication where I'll spend most of my year. We will focus our attention to ensure that our community gets all the support it needs to advance with this transition discussion. The goal is not to finish the transition. The goal is to ensure that we do everything we can to actually support you in achieving the goals we need to achieve. If that leads to the transition being completed, that's fine. If it leads to it being postponed, that's fine. Our goal is to make sure we support you. So when I heard the gentleman at the end of the table here mention the good support you've been getting, we need to do more of that. We need to do as much as we can of that. That's my job, is to make sure that in a busy year, we give you everything you need to be successful. That's a big goal for us this year. The second goal I have set for myself is to spend more time with you. I always joke, and Steve left, that Steve is my boss. Yes, actually, according to the state of California, he is my boss. But according to ICANN, you're my boss. And that's the dilemma we're all living with, by the way. According to Pamela Harris, the Attorney General of California, the board must make all the final decisions because we're the accountable party. But according to ICANN, the board should be really having the community, facilitating the community make the decisions. And that same dilemma applies to me as a CEO. In my typical CEO hat, if my board tells me go right, I go right, and as it should be. I don't think I've done that well enough last year. I have not balanced enough listening to all of you, consulting with all of you, and then also being responsive to my board direction. I need to find that balance. It's a tough one, by the way. It's not an easy one. In fact, I can tell you, because I work for you, that this is the first time the board, in their review of my performance, dinged me pretty hard. And I even got my pay cut in the last few weeks. The board will approve it in January. And the only reason they did that was to get my attention that I'm not consulting enough with all of you. And I accepted that. I think they're spot on. The board did its job to get me back in focus. So this is the second thing I will do this year, therefore, is to just personally give a lot more time to consult with the community and understand what consulting means. You know, consulting doesn't mean that I just inform you what I'm up to. Consulting means that you are part of the decision-making that I go through day in, day out. So that's my second major thing. And the third thing I need to work on with you is to make sure that we continue in a sustainable way to improve our operations. So it's one thing to say we improved our operations because we solved this problem or we solved that problem. It's another thing to say we have sustainably good operations. We're not there yet. We have solved problems. I think most of us would agree operationally we're doing better than we did 2 years ago. But that's not enough. You know, we need to have baselines and metrics that allow us to measure how we are advancing. And secondly, we need to have sustainable operational excellence. We're not there yet. So a lot more focus from me will go into that area. And notice all these three things are largely internal, largely to ICANN. So that's where my focus will be. Thanks, Ron.
Sorry, maybe whilst other people are looking to come in here, could I ask you one question? Over the past year, ICANN went through, or past year or so, quite an extensive internationalization in terms of placing staff in various offices. And it was a period where ICANN was particularly busy. And there were reasons to do that, external pressures on ICANN, visibility, that type of thing. Are you able to point to any instances where you can say already we're getting some positive payback from that process? Is there anything you can pick on that underlines the rationale for doing that?
When I started at ICANN, I was told there are two things I must do and a million things I need to get to. But the two things I was told I must do, one is to make sure the new GTLD program goes through. I remember I came when digital archery was the big discussion, right? Just to remind you the setting of where I came in. Nothing was working and people were feeling, oh my God, this is falling apart. So I was told if this doesn't get fixed, if we don't suddenly have the new G program kind of moving forward, we as an organization lose a lot of credibility. And secondly was what you said. I was very clearly told that one of the reasons I was brought on board is to help make ICANN's engagement, not just window dressing, truly global. And I focused on these two things. And I must say the scorecard, and I want to hear from you too, but the scorecard from the perspective I'm getting is that on both these fronts, we did well in the last 2 years. We're doing okay. We're doing better than we did. The new G program is working. Does it have issues? Yes, of course, but that's expected. Two things that would give you a sense of how we achieved globalization. One is that we now have, if you look at the map of our team and its engagement and the identity of the people on staff, we have completely changed that picture. ICANN is operating now either with an individual being in a country or with an office or with seconded people in 28 countries as of December. That's a quadrupling of where we were before. So we have increased our presence so that when people say, you know, we did something in, I was in Guadalajara with Tony and others, or we did something in other parts of the world. In India now, our engagement is deeper than it has ever been. We just were not present. People did not see an ICANN person. I'm going to Saudi Arabia this year for the first time ever, that we're going to go and engage with a government that's extremely critical of ICANN. Because of the change of the minister now that we have. Even Russia, right, has reached out and is trying to increase our engagement there now with Mikhail on the ground in Moscow working for us. So I think the spread of our team, the spread of our activities, the ability in China for any Chinese citizen to call us, to reach us, and to get an answer in Chinese, in their time zone, these are fundamental changes we did to how people can touch this organization, which was viewed very much as U.S.-centric before. Another big win for us is Busan. That's evidence right there. If you compare, I arrived, if you recall, in September 2012, and I was shoved to Dubai to deal with the wicket, and I understood nothing really then, and I still understand very little, but at the time, I really didn't know what I'm getting into. And the attacks we got, the meetings I had there, compared to what happened in Busan, is frankly quite a day and night picture. And if you ask, if you really go to the political analysis of what happened in Busan, and we got quite a bit of analysis out of Busan, including from the chairman himself, the chairman who led Busan, as well as the chairman of the wicket, whom I met recently, Mohammed Al-Ghanem, it is clear that the discussion as to whether ICANN has the legitimacy to do what it does is now off the table. It's just no longer there. When I arrived to the wicket, there were many questions about who gave us the legitimacy to do what we do. In Busan, that's now clearly off the table, and I just had breakfast with the new Secretary General of the ITU, Secretary Zhao, and he made it very clear to me again that from his perspective, that discussion is closed. And that's another win.
Okay, thank you. Who is? Oh. Okay. Jameson.
Thank you, Tony. Welcome, CEO. Let me first begin by congratulating you on the efforts made and the progress achieved, recorded over the past 2 years. One of it that is significant to me is the outreach, you know, to my part of the world, Africa. Sometimes before, some people I've met, some of my colleagues, say that things have actually changed in ICANN. That before now, you cannot collaborate with ICANN easily. We don't even allow you to use their logo on your program. And today, a lot has changed. My organization, we've for 2 years been collaborating with ICANN, of course through BC principally, to improve on diversity, which is one of your major goals, especially when you were in Ethiopia and you met with us. So this requires a lot of efforts and more budget. I'm very much aware that globally you are very aggressive, you're pushing a lot of agenda, which is good, which a number of us, when we were, even with Teresa, when we were at the UN CSCD Working Group on IGF, we really pushed a lot about what ICANN has been doing and will still do. So will you consider putting in more budget to community efforts? Because there are a lot of efforts within the community to broaden diversity we've been discussing all of today. Will you consider putting in more budget or supporting more budget for the community to do outreach, to broaden diversity, be able to bring in more participation? For example, in BC, we're just two from Africa. So we want to increase that. But that requires consistent engagement, not kind of beggarly engagement, but consistent, well-focused, and visionary engagement that this should be our long-term goal. Secondly, to underscore the effort we're making again, Net Mundia, which is very positive, which we also talk about at UNCSTD meetings and what needs to be done, and we're seeing it being done right now. So I want to ask you, how does that impact, you know, the Net Mundia Council, how does it impact the ICANN mission, core mission? Will it slow it down, or will it complement it? Will it give it more enhancement in terms of realizing the principal objectives, stability, security of the Internet, the resilience of the Internet? Thank you.
The answer to your first question is a flat-out yes, absolutely. I think one of the learnings I got from last year is that leveraging the community to do the outreach and the globalization is an area I haven't done as well. And this is why the board said, you know, refocus to see how you can leverage our own community. And they're right. So, yes, I have tirelessly gone out to the world and built teams and hired people and engaged, and that's all good. But as a CEO, I need to also direct the resources of the organization to support the community in doing some of the outreach. And the outreach from you to people in your circle is, in fact, sometimes more powerful than the outreach from ICANN staff to that circle, because it's genuine. You are volunteers. You're giving time. And when you reach out to them, I think so I'm very, very open to programs. The fellowship program, which Waleed mentioned, for example, it became very clear to me quickly when I started at ICANN how valuable this program is. I immediately asked for them to double the resources for it. And I've now asked them to double them again. Of course, Janice is screaming because there's just so much we can take, but it is a good program. If there are other programs that come to the fore that the community proposes, of course, it is my job to support them, and I will. And it also means I may spend a little more time at home, which is good too. So, your second question is very important. I think as we were finishing our major kind of startup phase for Net Mundial in the last 4 months, and that phase is done, it's behind us in the sense that Net Mundial ship has now kind of sailed on its own away from necessarily the docking at the shores of those who fueled it to happen. It's now on its own, and we need to distance ourselves, not to let it go and let it fail, but we need to play our role and let Net Mundial play its role. But you asked a very important question. Why is this important? Why did we even invest this much time? How does it support the ICANN mission? That's a very good question, and I will share it with you my view. Look, you don't need me to explain to you, since you live in that world, that the current global perception of how internet issues in general are being solved is getting worse, not better. While we were here this morning, the U.S. Central Command was hacked. This weekend, if you read the New York Times last weekend, you read about mothers paying ransoms in Bitcoin to get their files back. Now you have citizenry rising to ask their political leaders to do something about the internet. Snowden was different. Snowden made governments want to talk to governments about who's listening to whom. But when you have increasing problems and fear and anxiety by the citizenry about the internet, and they go, where do they go? Where does a citizen go? I mean, even in the U.S., more so outside the U.S., people go to their government. And they say, look, I feel I have a problem. What are you doing to help me? So as the number of these issues bubbles and continues to grow, issues of crime, issues of privacy, issues of human rights, and the list is long and distinguished. Where will people go? They will go largely to their governments. Where will governments go, given that the internet is not bounded by national boundaries? They will go to multilateral institutions where supposedly governments can deal with things that cross borders. So why is it important for Net Mundial to succeed for ICANN? Because if we create mechanisms that are multi-stakeholder to address all these issues, it supports our claim that the multi-stakeholder model is the way to go. But if all those other issues start going to multilateral institutions, the pressure on our multi-stakeholder institution will grow eventually, and we will be swept with other issues that people want to bring to the UN. Lastly, I'll just tell you that Net Mundial is important for ICANN because regional efforts to usurp ICANN of its role and to question its legitimacy in areas that are still not happy with ICANN are now shifting to the UNGA. So the French minister, Axel Lemaire, for example, publicly said, after she failed to convince the European Council to actually question the legitimacy of ICANN in November, she publicly stated, we're now heading to the UN General Assembly. So these are real issues, and we have political and, frankly, tactical advice coming to us that is concerning about governments pushing at the UN General Assembly. And unlike the ITU wicked type event, the UN General Assembly, whether you like it or not, meets every year. And they will start with this year when the WSIS is being reviewed and the IGF is being reviewed. They're going to ask the questions. Are these institutions legitimate? Are they doing what they're supposed to be doing? So while I'm no longer worried as much about the ITU, I'm actually quite worried about the UN and the General Assembly starting to question our legitimacy. So to finish, Net Mundial is simply another platform to address the non-ICANN issues, the non-technical issues, but using the same spirit of multi-stakeholderism, involving all people at the table. Is it going to be the place? Of course not. Is it going to be a place that we could point to when people say, we have no place to go, as they did in Dubai? Why not? We'll tell them, look, here's a place. And when you have ministers and different governments sitting at the Net Mundial Council, it becomes harder for them to say, there is no place to go. Well, here you go, there is a place, and you're welcome to come with other stakeholders and address the issues. Thank you, Jimson.
Mm-hmm. Shall we change sides for a moment, Andrew?
Andrew Mack for the record, if there is one. Fadi, Happy New Year. I'm sorry about all the travel. That sounded like it was a lot. So my question is a little bit following up on your conversation about Net Mundial and also about our timeline for IANA. And first of all, to Net Mundial, the way you've just described it is as effectively a defensive measure for our community against some what might be considered a disaster scenario at the United Nations. Recognizing that the community has an interest in maintaining a lot of what's good about our current system, I'm curious, it has not been widely embraced. I think a lot of people are very concerned both that you spent a lot of time on it and that kept you from other things. There's a finite amount of time in everyone's day, even yours. But also that it hasn't gotten the pickup that would make it necessary to be effective if, in fact, it's supposed to do the things that you said. So I'd love to get your comments on why you think that is and what you would change in the way that you're going to explain this if this is going to continue to occupy at least some of our collective time. That's what item number one. And then item number two is there is a lot of concern, and I think it's well-founded, that we have a September date that a lot of people are looking at, and at some point in time in the near future, we're going to get to a point where we have to say, if we're going to get to that, that some people are going to be calling for that September date to be held fast to, and yet there's a lot of concern that we get any transition, if there's a transition, right, ex ante, and not be held to a standard of quality as opposed to a standard of time. Can you talk a little bit about that? What does the September date mean to you?
I will spend, and now I'm answering Ron because I didn't fully answer him. I don't know where he went earlier. I will spend less than 5% of my time in the coming 12 months on NetMundial. That's a commitment I made to myself and to my board. So I want to be clear that I've done, I think, the part that is necessary for NetMundial to play the defensive role for ICANN, which is to bring together a council that can start then owning up to an alternative multi-stakeholder platform for addressing the non-ICANN issues. And that's, frankly, the extent of what I should do. I will continue participating in it. I already tried to withdraw, and the rest of the council said, you can't, you brought us here, you should stay with us, fine. But my time on this council will be, frankly, very, very, it'll be two meetings a year, three meetings a year, and that's it, right? Similarly, with our resources and our treasure spending on it, I already announced what we're spending for the first 12 months, and that's it, which is just our share to keep the secretariat going, along with the other partners, the Brazilian CGI and so on. And yes, it is a defensive move for ICANN. So NetMundial could be a place where problems could be solved. That's good. That's NetMundial's issue. But from an ICANN standpoint, because they're not going to solve my issues, we will solve our issues. It is purely, so when people say, where do problems get solved on the internet, they can't anymore say there are no multi-stakeholder places, platforms where we could start generating solutions. That's been the case, remember, with spam at the Wicket. We don't want this to happen again. Now, your second question is very, very important because you were pointing out to the date. This is a big subject. Let me be very, very crisp about that. No point meeting any date if we do the wrong thing. If it is not certainly, it shouldn't be not just mine, but our common goal to meet the date. That shouldn't be our goal. Our goal should be, as the gentleman, I need to know his name now, because I keep mentioning you, Greg mentioned earlier, that it's very important that we focus together on ensuring that when the U.S. ends that contract, that we soar. That, what does soar mean? Soar means, to use your word, Greg, that the world community and our community says, we've got this right. And right now, if I ask around this room, what does a right look like, I'll get probably 10 different answers, which means we're not there yet. We have to define that. And rushing through that to meet a date because of a political guillotine that is coming down on us at some point when the president leaves and his administration changes, I think is the wrong approach. Now, of course, people in the global community don't want to hear me say what I just said. They want to say, Fadi's striving hard to get this thing done by September or else we're going to go to the UNGA. And my answer to them is, look, my job is not to rush something and get out of this with a lot of blood on our hands and the community broken. What good is it for ICANN to be without a U.S. contract and a broken community? What good is it? What will that get us? So people have misunderstood me about the timeline. I speak of it as a timeline, not a deadline. Every project, we can go next door to the project management guys, every project needs a timeline. There's no question, we need a timeline. Now, but there's a big difference between saying we have a timeline and we have a deadline. If we don't meet it, you know, we miss. The U.S. government can extend the contract. Now, if we extend the contract and people who assess what we've done all year come back and say that we didn't do enough or we haven't made any progress or we haven't put our best foot forward, I think we have a problem. On this point, I'll close by saying something, Andrew, and I hope you engage me on this. It's important. What could cause the transition to falter? There are multiple possible things that could cause it to falter. An example of one would be that Congress would find ways to make it so impossible that, you know, it'll, you know, tie us down to the point where, tie the administration down. Even if we came up with the decision, they'd say no. I mean, we can't do much about that, right? I mean, we can talk. I'm spending tomorrow most of my day after I leave you in the morning on the Hill, meeting with all the chairs, the senators, and the congressmen who chair the committees that will look at our transition, right? There's so much we can do to influence those folks. There are political agendas that are much larger than us that they're dealing with. We'll do our best. And so if Congress stops the transition, you know, so much, so long as we show that we've done our part, we've communicated to them, we've engaged them, we've explained to them, then, you know, there's so much I can do. Where I am most worried is if our community does not come together to a consensus. Because if that doesn't happen, Andrew, how am I going to explain to people around the world who don't know us as well, who are not sitting at this table? Because they don't see the line between board, staff, and community. They see us all as a group. And they'll say, look, the U.S. government came and told you, give us a proposal. And you spend the year fighting. You couldn't get to a consensus. That will be difficult to explain. That, frankly, worries me, because that will, those who don't want us to succeed will use it to say, the multi-stakeholder model doesn't really work. Now that the stakes are high, those folks couldn't come together on any common ground. That's what I'm most worried about, and that's why I'm looking for an apartment in Washington, so that I can be close and closer to this process, close to all of you. It doesn't mean for those of you coming from overseas that I won't travel. I will be traveling. I'm already heading to Switzerland this weekend. But I need to focus on our community foremost.
Thank you. Okay, just going to say the queue has gotten quite long, so we're going to have to slow a bit. I think the next in the queue, though, is Kira.
Hi. We're so close. Karen Malin-Charyville from the IPC and Mark Monitor. The way I kind of see the two main tracks of work at ICANN right now is kind of how we do what we do and then what we actually do. And I think that right now and at this meeting so far, there's been what I consider, and this may not be the most popular viewpoint, a disproportionate amount of time and discussion and energy and effort spent on talking about how we do things and not enough focus on what we're actually doing here. And I think, you know, coming from a position in which my primary mandate is to protect consumers, and to obviously do that through the protection of brands and trademarks, I would like to see, I guess, in the coming months and in this year, a renewed focus and some renewed energy behind some of the issues that are substantive in nature, in my opinion. For example, I was very disappointed to hear the reasons behind the staff's delay of the RPM review, which we had kind of counted on starting at the beginning of this this year. I think it was due to, according to the GAC proposal for the review, it was due to start, I think, this month or February, and now it's, the initial report is delayed until October. Now, whether or not that delay is a good thing for the brand community and the IPC in general is it's not for me to say. In some ways, it gives us some extra time to prepare, which is fine. But the reasoning behind it, that staff was overburdened with things related to the IANA transition and things related to the accountability work, I was not impressed with, because in the meantime, there are some real issues happening in the community as far as consumers are concerned. There's a vast amount of cyber squatting happening in the GTLDs, according to some reports. I'll caveat. There is, you know, a lot of who is issues that are coming to a head. I think that your comments about security breaches, you know, highlights a lot of those. And while there is work going on, you know, certainly Kathy and I are, and others are on these privacy proxies. Steve are on these privacy proxy calls every morning, and that's 7 a.m. California time, by the way, every Tuesday. And so there's hard work happening, and I think that there's not enough focus at the staff and board and at your level on these issues. And I think that as a consumer advocate, I have to kind of call our attention back to that. Now, that being said, I do understand that the work that's being done in accountability and transition is very important to the outcome of the substantive work that we're doing. So I'm not saying that it's not important, and I'm also not saying that that it's that we need to delay that. But there needs to be, I think, some resources and attention paid, and one shouldn't suffer because of the attention to the other. Thank you.
Yeah, if I could just... Thank you, Karen. Much appreciated. And look, with your permission, I'm going to ask for a big favor. I took some time off between the holidays, and luckily I belong to a church that celebrates Christmas late, so I've been on holidays too long. And my wedding anniversary also was this weekend, so I kind of tack it all up, and I've been gone for a while, which is good. That gave me time to also reflect and to think about things. And distinctly, a week ago, of course, I'm going to brag about L.A. weather. It was quite beautiful, and I was sitting on a bluff in Palos Verdes alone with a pencil and a piece of paper, and I was writing down what I thought good looks like for ICANN by the end of this year. What does good look like? Because we have 450 projects. But what does good look like? Yeah? I mean, we give, all of us, so much to this endeavor. So much of our time, so much of our lives we give to that endeavor. Sometimes with little return, sometimes with a lot of return. But certainly the commitment is high. So I wanted to really reflect myself on how I could do better. And what does ICANN good looks like by the end of this year? And then when I came back this week, I informed my board that I'd like to know what they think good looks like. But I wanted to do it individually with them. In other words, I didn't want the board to have a session and spend 3 days deciding that. I asked each board member. So I was outside earlier with one of them, Yone, in Finland, and I asked him, what does good look like? And I'm collecting these. So I'm going to ask you for a big favor. Could each of you take a moment to write one thing, because I couldn't have five from each of you. Just one thing that you think would make ICANN look good by the end of this year. Just one thing. And you don't need to put your name. If you want, you can, so I can call you, but you don't have to. And then I also, since you're going to do this and pull up a paper and give me this before I leave, could you also put on that paper another point, which is one thing you'd like me to do better for you? And I will pay very close attention to these. I'm trying to collate these from the board and other community members. I hadn't thought of asking you, but you are a group that one of you there, the gentleman in the suit there next to Jonathan, said, you are the other. Sometimes you're viewed as the other. So I want to hear the other, because frankly, I hear from the other guys quite a bit. I want to hear from you as well. So you don't have to do it, but if you could, I would very much welcome it. Just 2 points. One thing that would make you feel, boy, this looks good for ICANN. And ICANN is not staff. ICANN is all of us by the end of this year. And then one thing you think I could do better as your CEO would be very helpful. So maybe Karen can put the one she just said, you know, pay more attention to this because this affects the consumers. That would be a very helpful piece of input for me.
That sounds a great idea. But in the meantime, while people are writing things down... While people are writing, I'd like to... I think the next in the queue was Laurie. If you... Sorry, Susan. Right. Okay, it was Susan. Okay, I'm confused. In that case, next in the queue was Steve. Yes. No. And then you.
Thank you, Steve Metallitz, with the Intellectual Property Constituency. Fadi, thank you for spending so much time with us today, and I know we'll talk with you again tomorrow. My question had to do with a phrase that I heard a lot in the early days of your presidency and have been hearing a little bit less often now, but I saw it again in the 5-year plan. And that has to do with the domain name industry. I agree with Dan that maybe we are the other group here, but I think one thing that we may all have in common, I think most of us anyway, the people sitting around this table, is that we don't consider ourselves part of the domain name industry. We and our clients and our constituencies don't make a living from buying and selling domain names and aren't invested in that way of economic. We're obviously very much affected by all of that, but we're not registries, we're not registrars, we're not, in most cases, speculators in domain names and so forth. So when I had some concerns about this early on and what I thought was some confusion at some times between ICANN's role and the role that might be played by a trade association for the domain name industry, and we've had this discussion. But then we saw in the 5-year plan that one of ICANN's goals, proposed goals, is to show stable, healthy year-over-year growth in the domain name industry over each of the next 4 years. I'm not opposed to having stable, healthy year-over-year growth in the domain name industry, but it seems clear to me that ICANN's objectives could be achieved whether or not there is growth in the domain name industry and whether certain players are profiting from the sale and purchase of domain names. So I wonder if you could say a little bit about your perspective now, a few years in, about what is the relationship between ICANN and the domain name industry? What do you see as the role that ICANN should be playing on that?
You're spot on, Steve, that when I came, I did not see myself clearly that distinction. I kind of assumed we're all part of the domain name industry, and I was wrong in assuming that. So I kept speaking about how we can help this industry become healthier, become stronger, etc., when in fact that shouldn't be ICANN's main focus. If, as a byproduct, the domain name industry thrives, that's fine. But I'm with you, and that clarity wasn't there for me earlier. And in fact, the creation of the GDD part of ICANN was designed for me to signal that I finally got it, that in fact a lot of ICANN was consumed by the work with the domain name industry and that I needed to kind of section that off a little bit so that we can pay attention to our broader mission. We still are, by the way. I mean, if you break down how much time we spend looking at even names issues in general versus the rest of our mission, it's still high, in my opinion. There is a more work we need to do, not just on the staff level. Although on the staff level, it's finally starting to work. In other words, Akram with his division really are, even physically now, we have a floor for them. We're starting to see them as they're part of ICANN, but they're attending to certain needs there. Compliance needs to be as far as possible from that. I moved Alan right next to my office now so that we are constantly in touch. He just continuously briefs me on things, frankly, I need to get much closer to with him now. So I think we're inching in the right direction, Steve. We're not quite where we need to be. But you are right. Our mission is far broader than. And when the registries and registrars suggested creating this thing called DNA, the Domain Name Association, I met them in New York, and I supported very strongly that they go do their trade association stuff on their own. And in fact, at the time, just to emphasize how much I learned, I had started my first year by meeting many CEOs of registrars and registries and so on, and I collected a whole bunch of things to improve the quality of registrars and registries. And as soon as DNA was born, I stopped all these projects, and I said to DNA, they're yours to do if you want to do them. We're not a trade association. But we still have work to do in that area. But I'm clear now, I must tell you. I'm much crisper. I don't envy. I have empathy for the next ICANN CEO because the learning curve is very, very hard at ICANN. I mean, if I knew what I know today, 2 years ago, I would have served you a lot better. There's no question. I hope the next CEO, either he or she and I will have more overlap time so I can share with them what I learned. I had about 30 minutes of overlap time with Rod, and it was him largely telling me things about what won't work, which was helpful. In fact, one of his best input to me was to spend more time with the board and to get to know them, which he hadn't done enough of. And I spent my first summer, you know, talking to board members. But anyway, it's clear. It's much clearer to me, and I appreciate that point.
I notice many people are writing. What I suggest is that we put the papers on the table at the back with the Bible at the end of this session, and then we can give them to Fadi before he leaves. So I think the order was Susan this end and then Susan this end, in that order.
And Fadi, I apologize for running in and out, but sometimes the internet is not a very safe place. And it was something that I couldn't fix, but somebody else needed to be notified. So I was just trying to do my job there. Name collision is sort of the topic I'd like to talk to you about, but also new GTLD program in general. And, you know, this past summer, the list of domain names on the name collision list, you know, was given thought that they would be allocated. But how would that happen? There was no preparation for that way back in writing up the applicant guidebook. My company in general has been affected by that, but I'm fine with not registering those names. They're fine to sit there, in my opinion. But if they can be allocated, those are names we want. And I'm only talking our core trademarks, Facebook, Instagram, you know, now WhatsApp and Oculus. I think it was a good example of the community coming together sort of quickly and timely and nimble, coming up with some requirements and putting it, you know, those agreeing to it, the registries agreed and registrars and you know, the BC was instrumental, I think, in helping draft the requirements for actually allocating the domain names. So I really thought, wow, this was a good example of how this all works, and I was feeling really good about it until I got one of the invoices. So we forgot one thing, was to limit how much they could charge. So .top, Facebook.top is on the list. The first sunrise period, they were going to charge me $4,500, but it was a name collision. On the name of collision list. So I couldn't do that. I'm like, thank you, because I'm not paying $4,500. So when it was coming off the name collision list, I'm like, yes, let's look into this. You know, what is the fee now? And the land rush fee is $90. They simply added $30,000 to the $4,500. So all of a sudden, I sort of feel like, oh, we've got this nice little process that everybody had to adhere to the first round. Couldn't be that hard to put this in place. And now my expenses go to almost $35,000 for a domain name? No way. I'm not paying. That is highway robbery, bribery. So now we have a domain name that's going to go out into the land rush, a domain name that there are many, you know, in the community had felt like there could be a threat to the Internet. That's why we held on to those for a couple of years, right? That's why we said, no, let's think about this, because this could be a threat to the security and stability to the Internet, is now going to be sold for $90 to some third party that maybe they'll be responsible with it and not do anything. But what if it is a threat to the security and stability? And it is now in the hands of a third party's, my trademark, my company's trademark, little brand damage. We can withstand that, but can the users of the Internet withstand the insecure situation that has now been created, all for a profit? So, I mean, there are some other legal means I can take once this domain name is registered, but we almost got there with this one, but not quite right, which brings me to the bigger question, is this launch or this application period for new GTLDs has a lot of holes in it and a lot of issues. You see a lot of things that we did not predict happening. So how are we going to overcome all of that and get it right for the next application round?
Wow.
That was easy.
Well, first of all, I'm equally taken aback by what you had to deal with on this. This is not good. This does not bode well. This is not, I wouldn't say the industry. This is not the environment that is healthy for us to stand up tall and say we're enabling this environment for consumer competition, all the things in our mission. So I'm embarrassed by it, actually. So having said that, your bigger question, so we don't focus on this particular point, which is well taken. First of all, we shouldn't rush. There is a pressure on us to rush. We shouldn't rush. We should take our time to take the lessons learned. And we should do it in a very, very thoughtful way, open way, inclusive way, and to use the gentleman's term again, to ensure the others are also involved, not just those who are, as Steve said, really the industry, but also those who are affected by that industry, businesses, individuals, consumers, everybody. And I think, frankly, the world is watching us a lot more now than it was years ago. We have many, 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 many eyes on ICANN. If I had told someone that in 2014 I would be questioned by the French Senate on dot wine, you would have laughed. But here I was in the French Senate for a half day being questioned by, bless you, by senator after senator about dot wine. And then, of course, you tell the French government, okay, where were you when these things happened? Well, we didn't know they were happening. Of course, I'm not going to judge that. But the point being that we're in a different time and in a different place. And how ICANN goes about its next round, it won't be just us watching. There will be a lot of people watching. So I'm hoping, we don't rush, despite the pressures that will be on us to rush. And they're already coming, by the way, from China, from different places. Some of them justified because they said we didn't have a chance in the first round. You guys we had not been informed. Some of them, in my opinion, very much driven by the need to make money. And we need to find in the middle of all of this a safe course to continue with our commitment in the mission to enable competition, but to avoid... to avoid these kinds of stories that you are telling. This is real. I mean, we need to take the time. We need to listen. We need to catalog these things. And the board or no one should rush into this without getting some of these things right. In fairness, though, Susan, we must all accept the fact that this was the first time we do this. In many ways. And so we learned a lot of things. A lot of the things we have done on the fly, I think the next time around we can adjust. We just have to be flexible and smart and patient and wise. And these are difficult qualities, but I think collectively we should be able to get there. I'm not rushing. I can tell you that myself. When my staff comes and says, you know, we're getting a lot of calls, people want to know when and how, and Akram's made some statements about it, etc. My sense is we have a long way to go before we can even talk about the next round. We have work to do. We're not there yet.
Okay. Thank you. Susan, top end of the table.
Thank you. Susan Payne from the IPC. To come back to you've touched on security issues just recently in some of your answers. ICANN itself has had, obviously, the security breach quite recently in relation to the spear phishing attack. And whilst recognizing that perhaps the systems that were compromised were not the most crucial and, you know, it could have been so much worse, how can we be assured that ICANN systems are safe and secure? And what lessons have been learned, and what actions have been taken or will be taken, either in terms of systems themselves or more likely sort of training and staff awareness?
Thank you. Needless to say, this was extremely bad for us. We have started a whole bunch of activities internally to strengthen our security in our systems. We rate, okay, we have been rated by an independent security body that we rate above average. We had done that rating 6 months ago or so. And we were in the middle of implementing a lot of things to strengthen our security, including internal training. That work continues. I'm not going to be apologetic. The reality is, of course, everybody that has strengthened and hardened their systems is still being hacked. That's a fact. I don't think anyone can say we're 100% safe. Having said that, the full plan of what we had done and what we're continuing to do will be presented by our CIO in Singapore, Ash. He's going to present all of that in more detail, so I won't take the time now. Simply to tell you, we have tracked the attack, so we know where it came from. It's confidential, but it's a country. It's a particular country that attacked us. We were targeted very specifically to get to some files. My personal email system, my personal file system was not hacked. But they wanted to get to certain files, specifically in the government area of ICANN. So, and of course, there was also a need to embarrass us. That was part of that, you know, to just embarrass ICANN. There's no excuse. Of course, you know, they've done their job. We need to do a better job, and we will do a better job. We have a very capable team. I think you all know how good our IT team is. With the addition of Ash, we are hardening a lot of systems. I'll be candid with you, and Ash will be even more candid. When Ash arrived, he did a very good inventory of ICANN systems. And he did a security assessment on each of them. And he came to the conclusion we have too many systems and too many systems that need to be hardened. This is a result of typical startup. I mean, I've built many startups and I've worked also at IBM and AT&T. So when you get into a startup mode, there's expediency with systems. So if IT is not responsive, you know, Maggie will run and do her own system because she needs to get her business done. You know, she's not going to wait for them. And so you end up with a proliferation of systems. And what Ash has been doing is rationalizing all of that, bringing it down to a few systems. We're moving a lot of things to Salesforce.com right now that will clean up a lot of systems. We have to just keep records. The system is up and running, and now we're moving a lot of things to it. So I would say on a 1 to 10 scale, we're probably a 6 to 7 right now. We need to be an 8 to 9 for me to be comfortable. I mean, no one is a 10. That will take us probably another 18 months. There's a lot of work to be done to harden systems. But we're not in bad shape. But we're not in... we are now a target, is what this attack proved. Because as you know, spear phishing is a targeted attack going after some very specific things. And yes, I will conclude by telling you, Susan, that we have also figured out how it all happened, obviously. We have now a full investigation that we understand how it happened. And yes, at the end of the day, it was a human. It was actually a very low-level employee at ICANN who let them in. through just accepting something that was sent to him by our head of security, which was obviously not our head of security. It is human training at the end of the day, but they were clever enough that they actually sent the email from our head of security, who rarely sends notes, but he sent one very specific message to a specific four people, and one of them unfortunately fell for it. So this is how it all started, and the rest happens very quickly, as you know. Anyway, so it's behind us, and we learn a lot from it, and we will present a full plan in Singapore.
Avery, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Just on the tail of that story, I'd like to, hopefully we're all using encrypted signatures now, so that they'll know for sure that it was from the security person. I wanted to go back to the one before in terms of the transition where you said you were very concerned about what would happen if we didn't get the job done in the 18 months or whatever time we had, but it was taking longer, and that people would be able to point to that and say, see, you know, the multi-stakeholder. I think that that's actually going to have to be a teaching moment for you to sort of explain that when you're trying to build a consensus among an incredibly diverse group of people, it takes time, that the only thing they could have gotten quickly would be something that wasn't fully multi-stakeholder. So I'm just, you know, just a sort of a brief reply on that one to sort of say, that will be a teaching opportunity for you to sort of say, you obviously don't understand how a multi-stakeholder process works. And you'll be able to show them the history, you know, of there were these concerns that were responded to, and, you know, you can build a very good storyboard on it that can actually work.
If I could quickly interject, I think you said it better than me, that what we now need to do is to focus on showing folks the progress and the steps that are taken, rather than focus the world community of we're going to get it done by September, October, whatever, to tell them this is what multi-stakeholder means, this is what it takes, these are all the swim lanes that are happening. When I said I'm worried that I couldn't even put a storyboard together, that people say, oh my goodness, you're telling me it's been 6 months and this group hasn't met yet, or they haven't agreed on some basic principles of meeting. So I'd like to have a good storyboard. That's all. I'd like to be able to tell the story, say, this is superb. You could actually learn from this, all of you. Right? That's how it works.
It's a teaching moment. And the last one I wanted to make was on countries saying they didn't know, they weren't included. They were there. There were members of their government that were opening their mouths frequently.
Two board members from that one.
Right.
Country, right?
That one's just silly beyond words.
Okay. Thank you. I think Kathy is next.
Terrific. Thank you, Kathy Kleiman. I'm going to go back to some lighter things, if I might, and more positive things. Earlier today in passing, you mentioned that there were better relations with Russia, and you said something about Michael. And so I just wanted to expand that a little bit. This is Michael Yakushev, who served with Susan and I on the Who Is Review team. He's marvelous. He's amazing. And I wanted to compliment you, because one of the things I've seen is just these wonderful people like Michael, like Sarmad Hussein. I'm happy to wait if you want. No, like Sarmad Hussein from Pakistan, who have come as members of the community, who are now members of the ICANN staff, and I think that's a wonderful change. And we know they bring tremendous expertise.
Mary Wong,
of course, coming from the community. Community to ICANN staff. So let me ask you a question that we were talking about earlier, which is, kind of the other way. How do we go from so this engagement process and the outreach steal a phrase from Jonathan? How do we go from presence to participation? I wanted to know your thoughts and anyone else's thoughts who wanted to join in.
We have not done a good job to help that transition. So I'll tell you what I did this year already. As you know, within ICANN, we have David Olive and his team, many of whom are here, who are responsible for supporting you in the work you do within ICANN. And then separately, we have Sally Costerton and all her engagement guys, like Michael Yakushev and all these guys, who are busy outreaching and bringing people into the ICANN community. There wasn't a very good integration of these efforts. And we figured that out because we looked at the numbers. We saw that our meeting attendance is growing, but then we kept hearing you guys saying, we can't take it anymore. There's a lot of work on our plate. And we started digging and figuring out. And frankly, what it came out to is, yes, we may be able to get people to the door, but then once at the door, we're not coordinating well enough to keep these people engaged and to keep them supported and to grow them. So I have now, and this is something I shared with the ESSO and AC leaders, but not broadly because it's an internal matter, but I have within my management team, effective January 5th, created groups. So I have management groups now. And I created one group that has both Sally and David. Okay. And I also moved the meetings guys back into that group because the meetings are, again, an activity that brings us together. So Nick Tommaso, Sally, David, and a few others have all been moved. I also took Chris Gift, who was focused on all matters digital, and I focused him purely on community digital engagement, and I moved him into that group. So I'm trying to strengthen internally what we do to solve the issue you put your finger on, which is actually very real. Now, the good news is there are a lot of people, more people engaged at the periphery, but we now drew circles and we need to bring them in. Now, to do that effectively, Sally and David have to work with you because only you know how to take someone by the hand and bring them in. So you're the one who said, let's create better courses. Let's create... These are the kinds of ideas we need to get out and put at work quickly so that we can really have what we are calling the continuum of engagement. From the moment we go to Yemen or Saudi, I meet a few people who say, we're interested, or I'm going to join as a fellow. And then how do we make sure those folks start carrying some of the load many of you have been carrying for long and will continue to, but we need more hands. The matters. So I hope this helps answer a little bit what you were asking.
Quick follow-up. If we have ideas, who would we bring them to?
Sally. So these groups that we created have leaders as well. I didn't change the organizational structure. All these folks continue to report to me. But for each group, I assigned a group leader, and the group leader for community work and engagement, we now call it community work and engagement, not just outreach, is Sally. So, of course, if you reach to David or others, you know, the message will get there. But the leader of that group is now Sally Costard.
Fadi, could I just check that you'll indulge us for a little longer? I'm aware there's a number of people who have been waiting.
I'm in D.C. largely to be with you. So, as long as you want me, I'll be here. And
thank
I'll
you.
Be back tomorrow as well.
Thank you very much. I think the order was, I think this lady, I think her name's Marilyn Cade.
Yeah, and sorry, Marilyn, I apologize for you should have been last. Okay. Yes, the queue is, there's quite a long queue. You're
thank
a fair way down, Tony, I'm
thank
afraid.
You. My name is Marilyn Cade. Fadi, I'm going to preface my remarks by something I wasn't going to say before, but I'm now going to say it. I've been engaged in pre-ICANN, defending ICANN, et cetera. I actually really question the idea of the optics of you moving to Washington, D.C., and how that will be received by other governments, and even how it will be received and misunderstood by our own Congress and by many, many other people. So I think, yes, you need to be in Washington as needed, but I personally, as somebody who in the last period when we had created ICANN and it was totally mystical, people like Metallitz and people like Rick Lane, who was then at the U.S. Chamber, we did brown bag lunches for the staff, we did education, we reached out, other people here did the same thing in their own environment, and we were the decoder and the best defense. And I just want to urge you to think carefully about the message that it sends to many, many people. And but what I was going to say is, as non-contracted parties, we have found it very difficult to be heard when we have raised risk and threats throughout the entirety of the process of implementing the new GTLD program, et cetera. We have been forced. I got a company, and I did a huge amount of the work, and we did the first economic study because ICANN staff refused to do the economic study. The people around this table bring real experience now, people like many of those who are dealing with the implications of the new GTLD program, like Susan, like many others. And it's true, we didn't think about everything, but we thought about some stuff, and frankly, we were not listened to. And so I raise that question because I hear you when you tell me that you have a new appreciation as a CEO of ICANN, that you now understand what it means to work in a consensus-based, bottom-up organization. I appreciate for a CEO from outside that is not easy. But you've also hired a very, very large number of people who came into the organization at a time when you gave them different marching orders and you had different expectations. And they don't know this bottom-up. And for some of them, they don't even know how to get acquainted with it because they're so busy delivering their objectives. So I think we need to figure out together how to help to educate some of the new staff, to give them a feeling of comfort that they are here to support the community doing things, and we need to understand that staff is partnering with us, but they're not a replacement to the community. The final thing I'm going to say is the Cross-Community Working Group on Internet Governance was created because of the disappointment and frustration of many of us that the community's voice and guidance was not being heard in how to deal with this vast landscape of Internet governance things. I hope we're going to revitalize and work with you and others because it is this group, this community, not just this one, but the very broad community that are the best ambassadors. And I've seen it at Wicket. I've seen it at the code word for an ITU meeting. I've seen it at the ITU Plentypot. I've seen it at CS, the Commission on Science and Technology Working Group. I see it at CETEL. I see it at ECLAC. I think the ICANN we want is the ICANN we can help build, but we have to be, we really have to get to the point that you and your staff really understand what that means to work with us as partners.
Unless somebody will tweet this to my wife before I call her, I did not say I'm moving to D.C. Because last time that happened, I got a call about Istanbul. I was not pretty. But no, I'm not moving yet to D.C. or plan to move to D.C. at any time soon. But I will, due to this year, I will be here. And so we looked at hotel costs and a million other things and how much time I'm spending away from my family, which was not sustainable anymore. And I told Sue maybe, you know, she'll come with me sometimes, but instead of staying in a hotel, we'll just have a place because I already know I'm back here for potentially the State of the Net, right? That's coming up. And then I have to come back for the Chamber of Commerce. They're doing a big thing in February, and hearings apparently will start right after that. And so, so I'm not moving. But I'll be here as often as needed, in fact, as you said. On your second point, which I think is very important, Marilyn, I did not have a eureka moment about the community. I think this has been work in progress for me. I've been learning as I go. Every time I make a mistake, I'm very open about my mistakes, as all of us, you know, would be in order to improve and be better, right? So I've been learning and improving my engagement with the community all the time. I got into trouble for over-engaging when I called some of you to discuss the move of the meeting from Marrakesh, for example. I got in trouble for it. They said, you know, why are you going to the community and asking questions? I said, well, I needed insight. I needed to ask the leaders of the community, here are the facts. What do I do? Do I go to Marrakesh? Do we not go to Marrakesh, etc.? So I'm very committed to that. That's the good news. You can count on this. And if you don't see me engaged in a way that understands that, please let me know. Please do just reach out to me, say, this is incongruent with what you said. You said you'll engage us. You're not consulting with us. But let me just finish by commenting on something you said. You said staff need to learn about the value of this model and how it works. I'm with you. I think staff can improve its learning. But one of the things we also need to do in parallel with that is define the roles and responsibilities of all the community. So let me challenge one thing you said. Who's the community? Is the staff part of the community? So somebody's nodding yes, somebody's nodding no. Here starts the problem, right? Is the board part of the community? Some people say. Yeah. So my point is, I think step number one this year as part of this process, what I hope happens is that we clarify roles and responsibilities. What decisions need to be made by whom? What consultations need to occur where? So that, frankly, it's clear. I think if we put that, it doesn't have to be a code of, you know, a hard code, but a general guidance. And by the way, I have the same issue sometimes with the board, right, where the board says, well, you should have consulted us on this. And half the board says, no, he shouldn't consult us on this. He's the CEO. He should run with this. We gave him the policy. He's just executing. Others say, no, he should have checked with us. Take the, you know, so I think clarity of roles and responsibilities and where the decisions are made is needed. And I would urge for your help, really, on that. I'm very open to it, and I'm very willing to figure it out. But if we don't do it, then we will continue, in my opinion, upsetting some part of the community, because why did you decide that? We should have done this or decided that. Or we will continue the mistrust. I actually have been really thoughtful about why does it seem that we don't trust each other? And, you know, trust is a very, very big word, and I'm not going to get into it because trust is a very complicated thing, even in families, much less in large communities. But the question really is, what is contributing to the lack of trust? Rather than defining trust, what is contributing to the fact that some of us don't trust each other? And one of the things, small things, maybe not a big thing, that I feel is contributing to this environment of I can't trust the other guy is the lack of role clarity. Because it's not clear who's on first for particular types of decisions. So help me with that. I'm really seeking the answers on this. And I've asked my board to help, and I seek for your help. This is one of my points on what would be good for ICANN by the end of 2015. It would be good by the end of 2015 that we're just like the example happened here, we're not disagreeing on basic roles as a community. Now, we may not all agree at the end who's on first, but at least we have a framework.
Steve.
Thanks. Steve Del Bianco with NetChoice. Fadi, earlier you speculated on what might be a really bad outcome with respect to the transition if Congress, for instance, sought to impose certain conditions that couldn't be met. I get that. But as there's a number of us in the room like you that have spent a lot of time on the Hill and on hearings and meetings and know the current thinking, and in many respects, we devised mechanisms to avoid having Congress say what to do and to stop the process by giving them things like stress tests or scenarios so that they could ask tough questions and we would be able to come back with an answer. So this morning, I think you were here when I was addressing Dr. Crocker, I mentioned the sort of spectrum of accountability mechanisms being considered by our working group. Let's suppose, miracle of miracles, we arrive at consensus among that community on a handful of mechanisms for work stream one, and we go to the Hill and convince them that this answers our stress test and they should support it. I think that the roadblock we then face is if the board, as advised by your general counsel, concludes that it cannot or will not support a key part of those mechanisms. And I see that as a risk because there's a fundamental difference of opinion on roles. What can we do to mitigate that risk? What can you do to mitigate that risk now that we know you work for us and not for the board anymore? So that's really good
to know.
Don't
tell them that. So it's a very simple answer, Steve, and I think you and I connected on this point much better in the last few months, that I don't think it is our place to question or scrutinize what the community thinks are the 10, 5, whatever things that would increase the accountability of the organization. It's not our job to do that. And if we get into that, talking about trolls, Marilyn stepped out, that's not our role. Now, the only test we should do, and so to help us not get things that will get us into contention, is if you ask us to do something that Pamela Harris would not agree with. If the Attorney General of California says, you're being asked to do something that is incongruent with your status as a California corporation, then we have to say no. Otherwise, in my opinion, everything's on the table. So don't ask me to break the law. Don't ask me to get Pamela Harris, who's paying attention to us now because we're no longer too itty-bitty 501c now. We are a serious 501c in California with quite a bit of money and responsibility. So if you ask me to do something that breaks something in that relationship with the Attorney General, then I can't do it. And remember that there are a few things that could break that.
Exactly, the advice of your general counsel to the Attorney General could end up being what creates the impression that it breaks the relationship. So there's where communication is so key, because there's fundamentally different interpretations about the structure, the articles, you're going through this right now. So just be careful to have both sides inform Kamala Harris rather than have a single memo come over from your general counsel, get a memo back and say, here's a piece of paper that says it can't be done.
Fair point, Steve. I agree with you. And first of all, I'm sure you know of Pamela. She's not easy to influence. She's a pretty tough jurist and a very, very smart and highly respected. With all due respect to my own general counsel, I don't think John can, on his own, change Pamela's mind. This is a high test. Having said this, you are right. The way we do what you just suggested is to make sure that your president and CEO, to whom John reports, is actually very much watching that process and ensuring no overreach by our own general counsel in order to maintain any aspect that he thinks would be better for the corporation, right? So that's my job, and I want to commit to you that I will do that, and that if I have doubt, I think there are enough jurists around this table that I can reach out to and talk to and take opinions from. But right now, frankly, my state of mind, my framework is this community is doing a superb job coming together. I want to thank you and all those of you who are serving with Steve on the accountability track. This is very important work. And that's the one, by the way, the world is watching very closely. So the ICG work will produce an operational proposal. Thank you very much. That's good. And it will be fine. I think they will come up with something. But that track is where people who question the legitimacy or the model of multi-stakeholder governance will be watching, and they're hoping we fall on our knees. So I need to be careful, as Avri said, to not keep the expectations where we may hurt ourselves, because they'll say, you told us, you know, these guys can't come up with anything. It's been, you know, whatever months. So it's important to keep the expectation right and then we do our work with honesty and integrity, and I hope we'll get through that, Steve, with your help as well, frankly, because you've been very helpful there.
Again, like I said, we do understand what we've got quite a big queue, and we may not get through everybody, so please try, and also apologize that we may not have the order 100% right, but we're trying. I think next, Waleed.
Waleed Al-Sakas. I've been really impressed of what you've done so far, Fadi. I still recall the first meeting we had when I became an ICANN fellow, and I recall the story of your grandfather, right, in Yemen, and how you feel connected that to this country and also to the need to have the South involved more and more in ICANN. How do you evaluate progress in terms of getting voices from the developing world into ICANN? I mean, you mentioned before, it's reiterated, and I just got Janice on Facebook cheering up for the shout-out for the fellowship program, but then there is much ahead in terms of what can be done. I mean, what is it that you foresee as a role for the community here in terms of extending your outreach to that region? And maybe in your own definition, what could be good in that particular aspect by the end of the year in terms of having this part of the developing world being more involved in ICANN?
From an ICANN standpoint, I think the measure of our success by the end of this year should be the number of people involved in the transition, as well as the number of people involved in our policy processes that are being effective and participating effectively for the first time. People who have never been with us before, or who have been at the periphery. They attend, but they don't participate. They don't volunteer their time. So we're starting to track that, and that's one of the things I asked Sally and David when they came together in this group. I want to track that. I want someone to tell me, you know, we have now 16 new people that in 2014 maybe showed up, maybe put a comment online, but they never gave of their time. The sign of commitment is giving your time, is giving, volunteering, participating. So I want to track that. We have about too many KPIs that I'm tracking. I'm now trying to get my team to bring them down to about 16 I would like to track publicly. But internally, we track about 85 KPIs. These are all new. We didn't have KPIs. When I arrived at ICANN, there were no KPIs. There was no, I would ask, what are we measuring against? What are the key performance indicators? We're throwing these projects. It was like we're just getting it done. It was very startup mode. In a startup, people don't have time to measure. They're just hoping to survive the day. So now we have a lot of key performance indicators by goal, by objective, by project. We're concatenating them. I'm building a business intelligence tool within ICANN so I can track these real time. And the ones that I will expose to the community because they're more high-level KPIs, I will put them online so you could all watch them and understand how they're working. None of this was there. One of them is the number of new participants in our core processes. And this year it's both policymaking, obviously, and the transition. That's one. But there are other ways we are going to measure that. And look for these KPIs. I'll be publishing the first. We will be moving on a new KPI platform and a new measurement platform effective FY16 because the new operating plan starts in FY16. So in June, these will be completely done and ready to go. But I will start showing some glimpses of these as early as I can.
Go with Adrian next.
Hi, Fadi. My name's Adrian Hall from Extensia. I've worked quite closely with your colleagues in Africa a number of times on the subject of engagement. And that's really why I'm here. I'm aware with the IANA transition there's a lot of challenges around engagement. And I feel you may have almost answered my question just now anyway, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Because for me, I'd like to see how we as Extensia can support with engagement processes in Africa, because we're well positioned to do that. But what I'm not clear about is, how do you define engaged? What does an engaged netizen look like? Do we have an agreed, and you're just saying there with KPIs, and I guess that means that with some people, that means that they're engaged actively in processes and they're contributing to this kind of a scenario. But then, is there a wider level of engagement at a different KPI where people understand why they should be involved with internet governance and why they should be engaged with that at a lower level, where they're not all going to come to these meetings, but they need to be aware that the internet doesn't just happen, it's actually run, and they can be part of that, or they can be, you know, it's like saying you're not involved in politics, but you are.
Thank you, Adrian. First, in case you haven't, I encourage you, we have a 5-year operating plan published on the website. It's the first time we have that. We've never had that before. So we now took the strategy of the organization, which was approved by the community and the board. We flushed it out into a 5-year plan. And within that 5-year plan, we defined all the areas we're going to focus on. And for the first time, we've published what are the things we will measure to say we are successful. Please look at that if you haven't yet. And this is a good place, Adrian and others, for you to tell us, no, this is not a good measure. This would be a good measure. Or could you please add that measure as well? Because I want to make sure, starting in June, when we approve the final budget for FY16, that already in FY16, all the projects are baked and all the activities are baked around the key performance indicators that we would agree to. As to your specific one, which I think is very thoughtful, it's kind of in the continuum of engagement, it's a step before. So once people are in, great, we know that we have achieved something. But there's quite a bit of outreach to explain how all of this comes together. Frankly, I've done, you know, I would say 80% of my global engagement last year was that. And if I can be also frank, a lot of it was targeted at governments in particular. And the reason I focused on governments is that, frankly, I had come to the conclusion these are the people who could do the most harm to the multi-stakeholder model. So I wanted to make sure those governments understood how we function and how we work and how does this all come together. And as you know, Snowden had raised the alarms in governmental circles. So my first meeting with Dilma Rousseff, I mean, while she frankly appreciated and understood what is involved, but she clearly had not put together all the pieces that allow this to happen. And this is in a country, in my opinion, that has the most advanced multi-stakeholder governance at a national level, simply because they do it. I'm not saying it's perfect or it's the best or it's the model, but they do it. They actually get together for the last 20 years and figure it out. And even that president, the head of the CGI, and we have, I see CGI members here, was not let into the palace. So I was with the president, and they kept him outside. And I told the president, I said, I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy to represent my organization, ICANN. But Madam President, your own head of multi-stakeholder governance in your country is sitting outside the palace. He should be here. And she agreed to stop the meeting till they went and got Hartmut into the room. So her chief of staff ran out. We called him on his cell. We told him, come back to the door of the palace, because he was waiting in the car. They wouldn't let him in. And so the message is, we educated her. We got her to say, okay, I have something I can be proud of. I have a multi-stakeholder community in my country. That education we spent a lot of time on last year. And China. Look at China. China was nowhere before Liu Wei came with us. I mean, they were shutting us down everywhere we went. Now we have the Minister of Cyber Affairs for China. Whether you like him or like his work or not, doesn't matter. He has agreed to sit on the Net Mundial Multi-Stakeholder Council. He's going to sit on it. Personally, he and Jack Ma agreed to join the council. That is, to me, a successful thing. So we are measuring also how many governments view multi-stakeholder approaches as viable. And that's why I need to focus on us now, enough on everything else. Because if we are the pièce de résistance of multi-stakeholder internet governance. If we fail this year to show progress, as Avri said, not conclusion, I think we send a very powerful message to all these governments we've reached to that maybe that thing is not as good as Fadi says. His own organization is faltering and haven't shown mature consensus building in place.
Thank you. At this point, I'd just like to mention we've got 5 minutes left on the time on the, that's scheduled for this session. We can carry on. The queue has got 7 people on it, so we're not going to get through that in 5 minutes. How do people feel about carrying on with this discussion rather than versus breaking out into... carry on from... Anyone not want to carry on? Anyone want to go to the... Anyone really keen to wrap it up and go to separate... Nope. Okay, we'll carry on. That being said, I think Mr. Karebe, I think you are up next.
Can I use you?
Yes.
All right. Hello, my name is João Carlos Karebe. I'm from Brazil. My question is about NetMojo initiative. I was one of the elected members. And there was some concerns and questions about the five seats, the permanent seats. Who will fill the seats? And what's the role of the seats inside the group? No. UNETMANJO has 20 cities with elected people and 5 permanent cities. The question is about these 5 permanent seats.
Thank you for clarifying this. First of all, we have already clarified that there will be no permanent seats because the community said we don't like the idea of permanent seats. So there are no permanent seats. Even ICANN's seat will go away after the startup phase. So there is no permanent seat anymore. The 3 seats were one for CGI, one for ICANN, one for the WEF, the 3 organizations that contributed each 200 grand to get the thing going. And we were there just for the startup phase to get things moving. And then, frankly, we, like everybody else, will have to go through a complete process of being part of this. So no permanent seats. We offered 2 seats to the iSTARS, and to the IGF. And this was done, frankly, a complete, as I'm sure you will confirm there, Eduardo, that we did it out of courtesy. We just said, look, it's a courtesy to these organizations. They did not agree to be there. We just offered it as a courtesy. And we're still waiting to hear from them. In the meantime, for example, two iSTAR organizations joined on their own. They applied. So the chairman of APNIC is now on the NetMundial Council. Tim Berners-Lee, Jeff Jaffe, and I talked, and the W3C asked their last CEO to be on the council, so he's now on the council, Abramatic, the French gentleman. However, these 2 seats we extended to the IGF and to the iSTARS remain, quote-unquote, unfilled and remain available to them anytime they wish to fill them. The rest of the 20 seats were all self-nominated. All of them were self-nominated, and they're all filled, I think. Every one of them has been filled right now. So the council is set to go. They will have their first meeting on March 31st. The reason we pushed it to March is because the Internet Society asked us to delay it and allow the community to build the terms of reference. So they are bottom-up terms of reference. So we pushed the meeting out of respect for ISOC's request, which we felt is a good request. And now the community will start next week, I think, or the week after, a bottom-up process to build the terms of reference for NetMundial. Did I answer your question? Did I answer your question? Okay. Thank you.
F-
Fadi, if you will excuse me, we very much appreciate your time with us, and I think if my maths is correct, then we're down to six people. But I just wanted to clarify that I think that could take somewhere the best part of the next hour. And I just wanted to clarify with you that's acceptable because we do have some other activities hanging on the end of this, which we need to make other arrangements for, whilst we appreciate your time. So if you're okay with that arrangement. Okay, we'll pause for a moment. Thank you very much. Steve.
Tony, could I just point out that one thing I think we know is that Fadi will be back with us tomorrow morning separately in those in our stakeholder group. So if there are questions that can be raised at the stakeholder group level rather than now, that could perhaps expedite the process.
Okay, so in that case, can I just check anybody who still wants to raise an issue during this session before Fadi cancels?
You sit down or?
Two? Three? So we're probably down to about a 30-minute extension.
Do you still want to ask a question, Marilia? Yep. Marilia, I think you were next in the queue.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is Marilia Maciel. I would like to raise a point that is now very far in the conversation, but the queue was very long. I thought about putting my flag down, but I think that it connects somehow to what we're doing here, so I decided to make my comments anyway. And it is about what you said regarding NetMundial initiative being a defensive line for ICANN and for multi-stakeholder governance. And I understand that being a consensus builder, what you said, it's very perfect, and that's what we expect to hear. And, of course, each person has a different understanding about NetMundial initiative, and that's the beauty of politics. But, however, when we think about multi-stakeholderism and internet governance itself, we have to realize that it has worked better for some than for others. And I think that it is conservative and pro-status quo to say that NetMundial initiative is a defensive line. And when we look at internet governance and the status of internet today, we realize that there are serious economic imbalances, geopolitical imbalances, jurisdictional issues, extraterritorial jurisdiction, cultural imbalances, and we have a status of pervasive and discriminate surveillance that really hampers the democracy and the human rights framework that we have built so arduously for ourselves. So I think that it is very complicated when we talk about defensive lines because, first of all, it crystallizes this status quo. We preserve what we want to preserve, but on the other hand, we cannot tell apart and separate the things that need to be changed. So we are kind of preserving what we have today, and what we have is extremely problematic for many actors, and I think that in some respects for all of us. And second thing, we label actors that think different from us as enemies, because when we talk about defensive line, we bring this to a kind of a military or confrontational arena. So we say, oh, come with us, participate with us, we have a seat for you, but we do not forget that you think differently, and we are in opposite corners. So I think that the narrative, it's not very appropriate. And for NetMundial initiative to really be what it can be, I think that we need to depart from the understanding that we do have these imbalances, that we have many things that we achieved with internet governance, that we should be proud of ourselves, but we have many things that we need to change. And I think that the same thing may apply to our discussions here. I was just listening this morning to many histories about the past, things that did not work, things that were a failure. Yeah, but many things worked, and the fact that we are here today shows that. So I think that we should recognize that we depart from different levels of understanding, of capacity to participate, even in-house, in this framework, in this scenario. And based on this understanding, we need to make a decision if we want. We are tied, and there's nothing we can do about it. So we need to decide if we want to walk together and walk graciously, or if we want to fight and stumble and fall. So I think that's just a comment that I wanted to make. Thank you.
Yeah, just a quick thank you, Marilia. I think your point is very important. As the ICANN president CEO, I answered the question very specifically as to why is ICANN investing its time, treasure, effort in that area. And from a pure ICANN standpoint, We do it really for two reasons. One reason, to make sure that people don't attack the fundamental multi-stakeholder approach we use by saying it does work and it can work for in other environments. And secondly, frankly, because it shows ICANN's commitment to the global ecosystem of internet governance, not just ours, which, as you say very well, there are a lot of issues out there that need to be addressed. So we are showing that it's not just about ICANN and protecting our world, it's also ICANN contributing to create an environment of solving problems. Now, when I have to wear my hat as a council member of Net Mundial, which will be very brief and very short opportunities, I'm no longer even speaking for Net Mundial. This is part of the change I made at the beginning of the year. So thankfully, Wolfgang Kleinwachter agreed to be now the ambassador of Net Mundial. So he's the one speaking for it publicly, not me anymore. When we talk about Net Mundial itself, and the reason so many people committed to it, is not to defend ICANN. Quite the opposite. Many of them have participated in it in order to start addressing the many open issues that need to be addressed around the world. So I'm hopeful about that, and I really feel the spirit of the Brazilian CGI, which is a very positive spirit, the spirit of Net Mundial, the meeting that was held in Sao Paulo, which was a very good spirit, and the commitment of ICANN community and the global community to make Net Mundial start addressing the problems is going to get us somewhere. I'm actually quite hopeful and confident.
Okay. Bill, you were saying you wanted to say something just very short, directly relevant here? No, I was talking to Bill.
I simply wanted to echo what Billy was saying. There's a problem of narrative consistency, Fadi. And when you present it that way, it sounds, again, like the thing has a predefined policy kind of role that would preclude work within the United Nations, and that sets some people's teeth on edge and puts people in an awkward position from civil society who have committed to participate.
Okay. Did you still wish to be in the queue at this point? Well, there's about four people left in the queue, so we can, if you want to talk.
Hi. I wrote some of my comments on the screen, but I want to follow up verbally about, and we've talked about this privately, because I'm still hearing this theme, they're saying the California Attorney General won't let us do stuff because we're a board and we have a fiduciary duty. And I want to reemphasize, because I think this message is getting lost, and it goes to some of Steve's points about really what is going on here. Because when you talk about fiduciary duty in a nonprofit context in the United States, you're not solely talking about the bottom line number on a financial report. You're talking about furtherance of a mission, particularly when a tax exemption is granted to do the business we're doing. Because if this was a for-profit corporation, we'd be looking at entirely different issues. So I am perplexed by this constant message of, well, the Attorney General won't let us do it. Your board has three duties: care, obedience, loyalty. And they all go to mission as well as financials. So I don't know if there's anything written. I haven't seen anything written about this governance issue, because it's a key governance issue. And what scares me about this is that sometimes I see this as a pretext for advocating moving ICANN out of the U.S. That is reactions that have come from the community. Well, maybe the U.S. is not the place to be because California law won't let us do all the things we want to do. And I'm not going to go into the debate about that, but I'm only going to say that there are controls here, and it's not a bad thing to be subject to U.S. nonprofit law, particularly when it takes in this consideration of balancing the mission, and our mission relies on multi-stakeholderism versus just looking at the bottom line.
Lori, let me thank you, by the way, because I know how clear you are about these things, and I very much appreciate your insight on this. First, let me assure you that we've never used that. I mean, I don't use that line often. This is maybe the first or second time I've mentioned it. It's to simply say that we are certainly not doing this in order to create a pretext to move the corporation. I can assure you of that. All we're saying is we're putting an extremely high bar on accepting almost everything you'll come back with. In other words, to say, if you come back to us with a mechanism that limits how the board makes decisions or checks or reverts them, or if it does not break the law, we must accept it, is all I'm saying. So I'm using it the other way. I'm not trying to say this is the boogeyman of Pamela Harris and therefore be no, quite the opposite. I'm saying the test for us to muddle with what you come back with us with has to be very high. And it has to, and goodness knows that it's not like John Jeffrey can go meet with Pamela quietly in a cafe and tell her, listen, Pamela, this will not be good for us. All of this will be public if it ever happens. We've never met her. He's never met her. But if he does, you will all know, has to be transparent. His arguments here have to be transparent. And frankly, if these arguments to jurists of your, you know, background and caliber and others don't add up, or if they are veiled attempts by ICANN, the corporation, to maintain certain privilege or certain to basically say no to the community on fundamental things that are in our DNA, then frankly, I hope all of us, including me, will flag this. Now, my filter on this is very high since I arrived, and John knows this. I can say this publicly about him. When I arrived, most people told me John Jeffrey runs ICANN. They said, John Jeffrey runs ICANN. What are you going to do about it? Right? I'm being very candid because I want to be direct with you. So I met with JJ when I started, and I explained to him that I've had GCs for 30 years and that I understand the role of a GC. Of course, his role is to do everything he can, and you've said this to me as well, Lori, to protect this corporation. That's his job. So now, JJ is also a very, very well-known and successful Eagle Boy Scout leader. He understands what mission means. So I also told JJ, look, we have a mission here. Yes, you have absolutely to play the GC, but this is not a regular corporation. I'll give you an example of something you'll appreciate. You probably know who Professor Coffey is at Columbia. So I met with him recently. This is, you know, someone who's regarded in this country as a very well-known figure in areas of corporate governance. So he asked me, Fadi, how is your board governed? And I said, well, I explained. And then he asked JJ very pointed questions. Do you do this? Do you do that? Do you do this? Do you do that? I mean, this is, right, a guy who knows corporate governance. And when he was done, he told us, he said, you're better governed and more accountable than 95% of American corporations. I don't know. What's the problem?
Low bar.
Pardon? Nice. No, but here's the answer we gave them. We're not a regular American corporation. We're not your regular. We don't show up in the textbooks that you teach, Professor Coffey. This is different here. And that part, that explaining what is different about us, which we all need to take into consideration when we say this breaks California, whatever. No, we are not just a regular California corporation. We are a community that is doing an experiment that frankly is unique and very valuable and very meaningful and has higher mission than most corporations. So it is in that spirit that I'll keep my GC where he should be, which is giving me the advice, protecting the corporation, but all of us, not just me, should have these antennas very high to make sure that we don't use process and law to dodge our commitment to the DNA of ICANN.
Yeah, I would just follow up by saying thank you. And this is not necessarily a slam on your GC. I want to make that clear. But I think it is worth a continuing discussion, because what COFFEE is concerned about and your GC is concerned about and CAMEL is concerned about is internal controls. What, like you say, the board has to evaluate me. The board has to make sure there's an audit. I mean, there's a certain defined set of internal controls that are considered the standard of good governance. But we're, as you say, we're going beyond that definition. What does that look like? Let's have a discussion about internal controls in a transparent way.
Thank you. Jonathan.
He's been very patient.
I have metrics coming, Jonathan. Let me start with this.
Yes,
and
I,
lots
I,
of them.
I'll say thank you for the KPIs, and I'll restrict my comments on them to when you meet with the IPC, because that was in the offices. Under which I wrote about that. The thing I wanted to bring up for the broader group, and this is too big a topic for you to even answer here, but I just want to plant this seed. There's this, all this talk about participation, and all of it is focused on meeting attendance. And I think that that is the most expensive, most complicated, most overwhelming way to participate in ICANN, and that we need to look and accept the possibility that there's going to be a distinction between the ICANN community and the Internet community writ large, and that we need to look more carefully at how we allow for periodic engagement based on interest from the Internet community beyond the ICANN community. And I think there's a number of ways that that can take place. Some of it has to do with how the staff present issues so that they can be more easily sort of consumed by people that are not insiders, so that people can make a decision based on their own interests about how they want to comment on them. Reforms in how comments are brought into ICANN and how they're processed and the order in which things are processed and decided upon, so that comments feel like they're something real, which is something that doesn't always feel the case now. And then also how these processes can work outside of working groups and how people can participate in working groups, again, with a singular interest as opposed to an interest in becoming part of this incredibly overwhelming ICANN community. And I think the real key and the most cost-effective key to expanding participation is going to be in periodic participation, and we will only have very incremental growth in global or general participation just because of how onerous it is.
I think we have one. We're down to our last person in the queue. Oh, no, we have two. Oh, quick follow-up to that question, or? Okay.
Go ahead, follow-up. Go ahead, Greg.
Sure. Greg Shatton, IPC. Just to follow up on the discussion about bylaws, I went to Columbia Law School. I studied corporations. John Coffey was my corporations professor. That doesn't mean I know as much as John Coffey. It means I had one class with him, but in any case, well aware of him. And just to point out to people here who aren't familiar with, you know, U.S. corporate law, while Kamala Harris is the Attorney General of California, but corporations don't submit a bylaw amendments or changes to the Attorney General. She is in charge. She has the ability, if she were to bring a case, if there were an issue. But this is not an issue where, and it may be different in other countries where there are actually submissions. It's a question just of general jurisdiction, not of any sort of review and approval process. So people who hear you say that Kamala Harris won't let me do that, she doesn't have the opportunity to intercede except by reason of her position. It's not that there's a process which puts this on her desk for a check mark or an X to be put on the bylaw amendments. Just wanted to clarify that. And I think that, you know, Lori's point is very well taken. I know you took it, which is that we are unique. And that we don't just have to be better than 95% of American corporations. We have to be different, and especially from for-profit corporations. We also have to be different from other nonprofit corporations, because we're really a governance ecosystem in the guise of a nonprofit corporation, which is a unique challenge. And I wish us all Godspeed in meeting that challenge. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so just before our last question, just a little bit more housekeeping to say your paper homework we've been putting down there. I know one or two people might have put it in the chat. Maybe if someone could have transcribe anything that was in the chat and just put that in the pile might be the easiest way to deal with that. I think we are down to our very last question from... thank you to everybody, by the way, who withdrew questions and will ask them tomorrow and so on to help manage the queue.
Thank you very much for that, David. And thank you, Fadi, for being on the hot seat for a couple of hours with all of us. It's been very enlightening, actually, listening to everything. And I'm very happy to just come back to two points. And they're a little bit contentious. You talked about trust, and you talked about... and you looked at it from the point of view of, rather than trying to define trust, what are the things that cause us to have a lack of trust? And you also mentioned the overreach by your GC from time to time, or the concern that there might be overreach by the GC. And I think that it's a very enlightening statement you made, that in fact many people in the community feel this way, and you wanted to make a correction on that. And I agree with Lori, this is certainly not a knock against the individual. It's just about this individual doing their job appropriately. Where the trust comes, I was going to take you aside, but seeing how we had a few minutes, I wanted to bring this to the table for everyone's benefit. We lose trust when we see things like singulars and plurals. We say, this just doesn't make sense. It doesn't pass the giggle test. And we say, how is it possible that we would allow, as a body, and it's we who are allowing this, and we who will wear it when it comes back and slaps us in the face, that we allow singulars and plurals. Makes zero sense to anyone in this room, and even on the registrar side, makes no sense to anyone. Yet, the board is determined, absolutely determined, we will not change that. This is done, it's cast in stone, and we're moving on. We gulp, and we just move on to the other things we have to deal with. Okay, so that's what happens. Vertical integration, before your time, but same story. Here we had a very contentious issue where we separated church and state, and we had very clear lines. And now as we move into this new world of new top-level domains, all of a sudden in the board's decision, they say, well, geez, we'll just throw it all together. Why would we not have vertical integration? When the community was lined up out the door in terms of the speaking line saying, don't do it, loss of trust. Now we're facing the GAC highly sensitive strings. In the real world, highly sensitive strings, .bank, insurance, pharmacy, health, those are regulated for a reason, to protect the public interest. We all, as we said earlier today, are representing the public interest, the users, the business users, individual users. Our job is to, step up and talk for them because they can't be here. And so we send letters, we have public comment periods, we do all manner of things. Even the GAC from Beijing, which was five or six meetings ago, said, hey, we need these public interest commitments, and we need them very clear. And meeting after meeting, communique after communique, nothing happens. Yet, at the same time, staff in the domains division has gone along their merry way and signed contracts and delegated these strings into the root when all of us in the community thought they were sitting on the side while we got this right. No, it didn't work that way. Loss of trust. So here we are sitting today with these elements that are so critically important to building trust, but we're seeing these things come back to us, and the net result for us is loss of trust. So, you made the comment, it should not be a process in law that determines what happens. And I think many of us feel that the board is being briefed by the GC saying, you know what? If we do this, we're going to face lawsuits from this one, and this one. However, you took $60,000 from every applicant to build a war chest for the GC. So let them go to battle. Do the right thing for the community and stop these things before they get carried away. Because when singulars and plurals come out and governments look at that and they say, who in their right mind could have ever made this decision? I'm not going to be the one to say, well, I did. And neither are you and neither are anybody in this room. We're all going to be saying none of us wanted it, but somehow the board did it, and therefore we had to face it. This is what we got. And it's the same thing with highly sensitive strings. If we do not freeze this, because we can't trust staff, we watch the GAC say, please look at this, and we all in the community thought it was happening, and then we go and we find out, oh, by the way, they're all getting signed and delegated. Where do we go from here? So the trust factor is to stop everything, as you just said, don't rush. We're talking about 30 or 40 strings that, believe me, if the financial institution needs some money right now, I don't think they need to sell domain names. So they don't need to rush to market. We freeze it, let the community sort it out, and then let them go to market under those rules and make a blanket change in the contract if so need be.
But this is where the lack of trust comes from. The community makes really strong efforts. The GAC, ALAC, they passed a resolution within the ALAC. They didn't just say, we'd like you to do it. The BC stepped up, and from the beginning of this topic, has been sending letters and trying to fight for this cause. Yet the board said, no, we've got to move along. Got to keep the trains running on time. We've got to get this thing through. No, we don't have to get anything through. We have to do it right. Because we all agree there are more holes in the applicant guidebook than Swiss cheese. And so we have to close those loopholes, but we can't get there by letting these things go through in the first round. It doesn't make any sense to us. So I'm making this impassioned statement just to say that's where the trust is leaking out of the thing. It's like a sieve. We pour it in, it leaks out everywhere. Why is it leaking out? Because we don't have this sense of trust. And that's the element. It's the critical element, is that just doing the right thing, the thing that, you know, just makes sense, if that would happen, the trust would grow. But always, when it comes down to the thing that makes sense, it seems to go left instead of right, and we all go, what? Well, we have to move on, because there are other policy matters we have to deal with. So that's the crux of the matter, and I just wanted to get that on the table so that you could understand why we're frustrated and why we're upset. Because we, as a community, are the ones who are responsible for this. Thank you.
Okay. Fadi, I'd like to thank you very much on behalf of everybody. We don't very often get the opportunity to spend this amount of time with you. It's been something that's very worthwhile, very much appreciated, and I'd like to thank you on behalf of everyone for that. Thank you. Thank you.
Fadi, the group will very much look forward to seeing you tomorrow. This is the last time this group is all going to be together until noon tomorrow. The schedule is for breakout sessions, and you can flip the screen for me. The CSG is staying here. The NCUC and NPOC are moving down to the conference level, and staff will help you get down there. You're scheduled through 6 p.m. tonight. At which point you're then free to break. You're free to break before then, but we imagine you'd like to work until 6. Then we have a reception scheduled for 7 p.m. across the street in the overlook room of the Beacon Hotel. Everyone here is welcome to join us for that. Tomorrow morning, similar to this morning, we have the continental breakfast at 8:30, and at 9 o'clock sharp, Fadi is going to be in this room with the CSG, followed by him then heading downstairs to meet with the NCSG for the second part of the morning. So that's generally scheduled. We'll see you all, I hope, across the street at 7. For those of you who we will miss, we'll see you at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, 8:30-ish, and then everybody back in this room at noon tomorrow. Anything else anyone would like to say? Otherwise, thank you very much.